Hello and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show, and joining me here at League Express HQ on a Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Mr. Martin Sadler. Matthew Shaw is here.
Hello.
And making her debut, assistant editor from League Express, it's Lorraine Marsden. Hello.
You've missed out. If we'd have known, we would have celebrated this with Lorraine baking cakes. Because she is our expert cake baker.
I wouldn't say expert, but
she does some nice
made a cracking Australian crunch last
It's
week.
One reason why most of us here Martin look as though we could lose weight.
Anyway.
What do you mean, most of us?
So, hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. A look back at round 8 of Super League coming your way in a minute or two. But also coming up, we're going to be joined by the chairman of Challenge Cup giant killers, Fat O'Heath, and we're talking the Women's Super League as we're going to be joined by the RFL's Karen Morehouse. But before that, some breaking news, everybody. Brian Barwick is leaving his post at the RFL. Matthew, this is big breaking news on Wednesday. I mean, what's your take on it, being nice and generous?
Well, I responded to the news on Twitter by using one word, and I can wrap up what I think in one word, and I'll let Martin go into more detail. Good.
You're not his biggest fan then, Matthew?
Well, Martin, can you tell me what he's done in 6 years in charge?
Not particularly. I mean, the thing.
Shot clock, is that not his?
No, unfortunately it isn't. No, Brian, when he first took the job, he made a famous quote, didn't he, where he said, you know, my contacts book is going to be open now for the benefit of rugby league. And since then, we seem to have probably declined in terms of commercial, you know, contacts and so on. We've certainly not made any progress in terms of getting rugby league in the national media. I mean, we can't just blame Brian Barwick for that. I mean, it's a fairly long-term trend. But you've got to say that it is difficult to know exactly what Brian's achieved in those 6 years, and it's particularly disappointing when you think back to what he did before taking that job up. He was he's been the chief executive of the Football Association. He was the guy who appointed Fabio Capello, incidentally, as the England manager some years ago.
Not a
great one, as it turned out. But he was also the head of sport at the BBC. He was the controller of sport at ITV. You know, he's had a lot of really major jobs. So he's obviously, you know, a very able guy. He's very good at getting those jobs. And I mean, I when he first got the job at as a chairman of the RFL, I went for lunch with him. He invited me for lunch, and it was an incredibly enjoyable, entertaining hour or two, because Brian, the one thing I'll say about Brian, he's got a great sense of humour. He's a Liverpudlian, and he's got a sort of Liverpudlian sense of humour, which we all know is for the most part a great sense of humour. He could tell you stories from here to kingdom come about, you know, his life in sport, and it's all incredibly interesting, really. But the problem, I think, with him is that he's had actually a really low profile as the chairman of the Rugby Football League, and that isn't what I expected. I thought that Brian would speak out, you know, in the media far more than he ever has done. He's been reluctant, actually, to speak on most of the sort of controversies that have cropped up during his time in the role. You know, the split between Super League and the Rugby Football League, for example. You know, he's just not wanted to say anything in public about it. And I just don't think you can be that way. If you're the chairman or the chief executive of a major sporting body. And I think the same criticism to Ralph Rimmer at the moment. Ralph has a very low profile, and I don't think that's wise. I think you know, rugby league people like to see the sport being led and having somebody pretty strong in charge of it. And I don't think Brian, you know, despite all his qualities, and he obviously has quite a few. I mean, he's still involved in lots of other organisations. He's involved with the University of Liverpool, for example, on their strategic management courses and so on, but he's just not, you know, he's just not been visible enough for me at the RFL, and that's the problem, I think.
I mean, do we need a chairman, Lorraine? Now we've got Rob Elston and we've got Ralph Rimmer. Do we need a unifier in a way?
I think we do. There's definitely need for somebody to sort of oversee everything and lead the way a little bit, but it also needs to be somebody, as Martin says, with a profile that can go out there and sell the game and show people what they need to be watching.
I was going to say, Lorraine, can we think of any female candidates? That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? You know, we've had a succession of males who, you know, maybe it's time for a woman to become the chairwoman.
The person that I'd love to see have a more prominent role in rugby league is Sally Bolton.
I think we're barking up the wrong tree there, though. I think she's very much at home in SW6, working for the Lawn Tennis Association. I don't think she'll ever leave that role now. And I don't think she'd have time to take the chairmanship of the RFL.
Brian Barwick does stay within the sport. He's got he's continuing his role as president of the Rugby League World Cup. We're wishing well anyway with his next roles. But let's turn to matters on the pitch now. And last weekend, with regards to round eight of Super League, and I'll come to you first, Matthew. We learnt a lot, I think, last week. The main thing that I learnt was that Brad Dwyer can score field goals. What do you make at the end of that match,
Ken? It was the first golden point I've seen, and when I did a column after the rules were, you know, the new rules were brought through, and I got quite a lot of criticism for defending the golden point. And I understand it. I understand from a purist point of view what's wrong with a draw.
But now you feel smug, Matthew.
I think the people who were for Golden Point have been justified, because the big
certainly on that occasion you can't argue with it.
I think
you?
the big thing for me about Golden Point is that it was brought in to manufacture unforgettable moments. Now, if you ask Hull fans and Leeds fans at the end of the season what one of those their memorable moments of the season will be, they will be Mark Snead kicking the winning drop goal to end their losing streak against Wigan, and Brad Dwyer kicking the drop goal. And I think if you ask rugby league fans what one of the most memorable moments of the season will be, it will be Dave Furness's reaction to Brad Dwyer's drop
goal. It's interesting, isn't it, that at the end of the season we always have a series in League Express over 5 weeks, the 50 most memorable moments. Mm-hmm. And I would bet my bottom dollar that both of those field goals will be in those memorable moments at the end of the year.
Another memorable moment from the night, Lorraine, was Paul McShane. And there's a gif, isn't there, that goes on the internet from Naked Gun with everyone slapping their foreheads. Yeah. And that was one of those moments, wasn't it, right at the end there for Castleford.
Yeah, you wonder what was going through his mind. And fair play to him. He stood up at the end of the match in the post-match interviews and admitted that he probably made the wrong call. And, you know, I think that probably took us as much guts as making that initial.
He's going to need an arm around him, isn't he?
But what's not been said is that, in fact, Castleford should have had a penalty at that point, because the Leeds players, they should have been all back on their own line, you know, the defensive line. Not a single player was. And most of them, there were several players deeply offside. If you actually look at the footage, I think he was probably, you know, he must have thought about giving the ball to Jake Truman, but the Leeds defenders were already onto him, weren't they? Yeah. So, you know, I think maybe McShane has had more criticism than he deserved, and actually the game should have ended with a penalty to Castleford in front of the post.
The other thing as well, if Paul McShane throws that dummy and scurries through and scores, he's a genius, and the whole why is Paul McShane not playing for England debate spreads like wildfire again, doesn't it? So it's one of the, I think you back your top players to make the calls that they see, and you back their judgment. Paul McShane is definitely one of Castleford's go-to guys.
Oh yeah,
he made the call what he thought was best, and it didn't come off. Does that make Paul McShane a bad player? Absolutely, 100% not. He's a tremendous player, I personally think it is a travesty that he's not at least in the England Knights squad.
But, well, yes. Well, I mean, he's probably too mature for the England Knights, but he should, you know. Mind you, there are a lot of good hookers, aren't there, at the moment? But
the most important thing, everyone's missing here, Leeds won a game.
Yeah. They needed that. I tell you what as well, if they'd have lost from the position they were in, my God, it would have been a crisis at that point if they'd have somehow managed to find a way to lose that game.
But the real thing about that Golden Point game, it just went viral, didn't it? The footage of David Ferner And it was tremendous. It was shown on news bulletins, sports bulletins. It was mentioned on radio bulletins. You know, everybody saw it, it seems. And you can't argue with that, can you? You can't argue with it. If the only thing that I was slightly disappointed by was that I actually asked Super League to, you know, come and comment on it. You know, let's have your reaction to it. Let's, you know, come and gloat about it, for goodness sake. And they seemed reluctant to do. They didn't want to say anything about it, which struck me as surprising. I don't know whether there was
probably to defend lip readers, because there was no warning on the bad language being used for lip readers who could quite clearly read what was going on. But anyway, that was Thursday night at Headingley, and Leeds' next game will be also on a Thursday night, an away trip to Hull KR, and that leads me on to Hull KR and their match with St Helens. Safe to say they gave it a go, Lorraine, didn't they?
They certainly seemed to. I mean, I've not seen much of the footage myself, but they certainly, you know, went up against arguably the best team in Super League this season so far, and really, really gave themselves a chance.
And the narrative going into that game, we were saying, oh, Hull KR should probably rest a few players because they're not going to get anything. But that goes to show you that you can if you do, you know, give it some welly.
And if you look at the players they didn't have playing, there was no Danny Maguire, there was no Robbie Mulhern. So it's turning into a funny old league, Super League. It's turning into the league I think everyone wants it to be, and that's excusing Warrington and St Helens more to the point. Everyone is beating everyone, and I think that is where we want Super League to be. And the fact that Hull KR, who could run Saints as close as they did, admittedly, you know,
it
Saints
was a
had a few
Saints.
Out as well.
Yeah.
They did. Nevertheless, I think it's encouraging that we're at that point. You know, it's easy to say Saints had a few out. You look at the players that Hull KR had out too, and equally, they were probably more weakened than Saints were, in truth.
Just still on Saints, though. Just still on Saints. I mean, it's quite interesting to see, isn't it, that Theo Farge is now going to be out for a while. He's picked up an injury, and that gives an open door again to Danny Richardson, who's been, you know, playing for Lee this season so far. And he must have found it a strange experience, because last year he was, you know, Matty Smith got injured before the start of the season. Danny Richardson stepped in. Smith never got back into the side while Richardson was there. And Richardson ended up in the dream team. So, you know, what a season he had last year. And then to start this year without an appearance in the first eight rounds is quite incredible, really, isn't it? And, you know, at last, I assume, he's going to get his chance.
Well, St Helens now played 8, won 8. They've got a remarkable 8-point gap down to the bottom end of the playoff position. So that's quite a lead they've got already. Warrington Wolves are trying to keep up with them. To say the least, it was one hell of a performance on Friday night. I mean, where'd you start with that?
Well, it was a marquee player performance by Blake Austin, wasn't it? 4 tries, but had a hand in many others. He actually looked magnificent. I think I compared him in League Express to the great Brett Kenny, particularly when he scored, I think it was his second try, where he ran through from the halfway line.
It was his hat-trick, wasn't it?
The second one
was that ridiculous dummy for him.
That's right, yes, it was his third one. But, I mean, it was absolutely magnificent. And you know, he actually showed there why Warrington bought him. Now, Warrington have had a missing link for the last few years. You know, they've got to the two finals in 2018 but couldn't win them. But I think they've now found the missing link, and I think they will win at least one major trophy this year.
Well, 34-0 up after 32 minutes. What do we read into Hull's performance, Lorraine? Because they were hit by a freight train, weren't they, really?
Yeah, I think when a team starts a game as Warrington did, it's just so difficult for the opposition to then get any foothold back into it, and that's what happened with Hull on Friday. They were just absolutely blown away in the first half an hour, and then the game was gone, and no matter what they did after that, it was always going to be difficult to pull it back.
I mean, we saw this with Salford at Catalans. Yep. The amount of tries and extra points being given away by players just going, yeah, you've scored that try, you go running field now, get as close as you can to the sticks. There was a bit of that towards the end.
I don't want to overreact to one defeat.
Oh, no.
No, I'm trying to be constructive here. I don't want to overreact to one defeat. I think it did reinforce, though, and it's something that I think is accepted within the confines of the KCOM that an overhaul of the squad is needed. It is an ageing team.
It is.
An ageing team.
Limited enthusiasm, it seems to me, as well.
Yeah.
You know, as Ben has just implied there, you know, they didn't seem to want to fight for every point. And that's a bit worrying, really. Because you can get defeated. And sometimes, you know, you come up against a really great side playing hot.
Mm.
I mean, it reminded me of Castleford beating Leeds in 2017, 66-10, if you remember, at the Jungle. And, you know, everybody stood back and said how incredible Castleford were. And I felt the same watching Warrington last Friday night. But Hull, you know, they do need to... What's disappointing about Hull is they just don't seem to be producing young players who are really going to burst through and
make a big impression. It's surprising considering the academy that's there.
Well, they've got a joint academy now, and it was supposed to, you know, be the solution to their problems. I find it ridiculous that we can't have two academies in the city of Hull. I mean, it's a massive city. It's a rugby league city. You know, there ought to be thousands of young kids playing the game there. There aren't as many as there should be. And it's a thing that's what needs looking at by both clubs.
This might come up now with the idea that those clubs running academies will have to run reserves.
Yeah.
And that might force them into...
I think, yeah, with Hull and the youngsters, it's a valid point. They have a few coming through. Jordan Lane's looked okay.
Mm.
They've got young Cameron Scott, the centre who played for the England schoolboys, who looks... he's not from Hull, but he's come through their system.
Mm.
But it is a valid point. I think it's telling that when they were struggling, they felt the need to bring Gareth Ellis, who was 38 years old, out of retirement.
Yeah, yeah. Great guy, Gareth Ellis. Not the future, obviously.
No. And before that, they brought Kirk Heeman out of retirement.
Mm.
So I think it's a valid point. But yeah, just it is an ageing team. And I think they got 15 off contract. I don't think that's something that will upset Hull. I think they will quite enjoy the challenge of rebuilding their squad and trying to take a fresh stance on it. The big talking point on Hull within those players is whether Mark Snead stays, because he is off contract and as of yet has not agreed a new deal.
I mean, no. just to balance it out a bit, they are sitting sixth.
Oh yeah, at the end of the day, like I said, I don't want to overreact, because they've played on the whole okay.
8 points from 8 games.
Yeah, they've not, but is it, have they got a squad that has the potential in the future to win major honours? I don't think so. Is it a squad that this year has the potential to win major honours? No, I don't think so.
See, what's interesting though, you know, that very often a team gets hammered, you know, like this, going back to Leeds in 2017, and then bounces back and wins a few games. I know Leeds won several, you know, at least 4 games on the trot after they lost to Castleford in 2017. And the Catalans lost at home to Salford, didn't they, 45-0, but then won the next game, I think was at Hull Kingston Rovers, if I remember. So, you know, it's funny, teams sometimes do bounce back, and Hull are at Salford this week. Yeah. Now, Salford don't have a great home record. You know, it wouldn't surprise me, I don't know what you think, Lorraine, if Hull were to bounce back at Salford and, you know...
Especially with their home record
surprises.
At the moment.
Yeah. And, I mean, Salford themselves were quite... Well, they had a close call at the weekend, didn't they, as well? And that was a tough game for them, so they might have some sore bodies and stuff, and Hull certainly will want to right some wrongs this weekend.
Well, Wakefield up to fourth with that win over Salford. So, and like we said, Salford's home form isn't the best, and they are hosting Hull this weekend. Friday night game for Warrington against the London Broncos, and a big, big win for Huddersfield.
Mm.
A vitally important win. I asked you last week, are Huddersfield back?
Look, I won't want to say that yet. I don't...
Well, they're now in ninth place, aren't they? So yeah. The pressure is easing.
Look, I think Aaron made a valid point last week that it's very easy to look at the table after 6 or 7 rounds and make assumptions that are probably unwise. The amount of times you see a late bloomer, Catalans did it last year, Huddersfield did it last year. I don't think you can judge a season until everyone has played everyone, in my opinion.
I'll tell you what's interesting, though. This weekend, this Friday night, Huddersfield go to Wakefield.
Mm.
And I think the Huddersfield players will be really quite highly motivated for that, wanting to put one over Danny Brough. But equally, Danny Brough will be pretty highly motivated to put one over his old club. So I think that's going to be a game really worth watching and being at.
The problem with Wakefield, isn't it, is it's just consistency with Wakefield. Mm. It seems to be a case this year. I know they lost two, but it's been sort of, they seem to win then lose and win then lose. Mm. They never seem to be able to string.
The loose games you don't expect them to lose. Well,
the perfect example was when they lost to Hull KR at home. You just don't expect that loss.
But they did beat Salford, which is a
100%.
Good,
and they nearly beat Warrington. So with Huddersfield, Huddersfield seem to have this wonderful knack of seeming to be on the right path, and then something goes disastrously wrong.
Yes.
So it wouldn't shock you if they got absolutely hammered. It wouldn't shock you if Wakefield lost the game. It just seems to be the traits from the team. So it's an interesting one. It was certainly a good win for Huddersfield. The concern for London is how slow they are starting games. They've conceded the opening try in all but one of their games so far, and they've conceded in seven of their games so far in the opening 10 minutes. That's just not... They've got to sort that out. They've
not
got to
enough.
Fix that up.
Yeah.
Well, ask the question, are Huddersfield back, Lorraine? Are Wigan back?
It's... Up until this week, it was looking like that, but with the squad changing as it has this week, with Hamlin, the situation there, you can never tell how that is going to affect a squad internally and then how that affects things on the field.
If you're the comms guy at Wigan, you must be pulling your hair out at the moment.
Well, yeah. he's got loads to write about. He's certainly not going to lose his job, is he?
Can I put it out there that I think there's a culture issue at Wigan? A serious one.
Mm.
2016, John Bateman was involved in that incident that saw him. I think he was stood down for a while. They had the infamous Tompkins brothers. Zach Hardacre was charged with drink driving. Craig Mullen has been charged with drink driving. Now Gabe Hamlin. So that's all happened within 2.5 years. There's
it's too many,
there.
Isn't it?
It's too many too soon. And why is that happening? This is a proud club that prides itself on being the big dog, seen as the pinnacle of rugby league. Where really at the minute the players are tarnishing that.
And it's not just the players. Don't forget, it's the it's
Sean
the,
Edwards
and the salary cap situation, which they've resolved now. But was unwelcome publicity. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
So there's for me, I might be being harsh, but there's too much.
There's a big job needed on rebuilding the
public
image of Wigan Rugby League Club.
Yeah,
and I hope they do, because it's it's a massive club. We want the club to. To really be admired.
You have to wonder about Sean Edwards as well. You know, there's various reasons why he may or may not want to come, and I mean, Martin, you've heard a few of them. I just think something doesn't seem right. The fact that players keep leaving, big players keep leaving as well.
Yeah, but that does happen. That happens at a lot of clubs, and of course, the thing is, if The money available in Australia now is quite significant for rugby league players, and when they recruit players from this country, one of the first clubs they're going to come to is Wigan, of course, because Wigan have some of the better players. And it was quite interesting. I was watching the Canberra Raiders at the weekend, and Ryan Sutton's starting for them now as well. And John Bateman is doing brilliantly in the Dally M medal voting after just 3 games. So they're going to come for more players. When you have success like that, Canberra have got 4 ex-Super League players playing for them. South Sydney have the Burgess brothers, of course. They're all, successful. So inevitably, as night follows day, Australian clubs are going to come looking for English talent. There's no doubt about that. So clubs like Wigan are going to struggle to hold on to them, because not only can they offer lots of money, but a great lifestyle as well, and a lifestyle where rugby league is a major sport.
Well, Wigan did beat Catalans at the weekend, and quite decisively as well.
Absolutely,
42 points to nil. I mean, we could discuss Catalans if you'd like. I mean, that's another drubbing. They keep winning the odd game, but then getting beat quite.
They win games narrowly and lose them heavily,
which
is weird, isn't it? Yeah. What could you do about that if you're the coach?
I mean, that doesn't bode well for the return match at the new camp next month,
well,
does it?
The big thing is, and it's a long term thing, everyone's criticised Catalans for having a soft underbelly for years. Now you look at the players they've brought in, and that should have fixed that up.
Mm.
And it hasn't. So why?
Mm.
is it something above the players?
Is it too soft a lifestyle in the south of France? Because there was a lot of publicity leading up to the game last week with Sam Tompkins saying how marvellous it is, you know, to live in near Perpignan. You're next to the beach, you're next to the mountains, you know, you can go skiing, you know, sunbathing, swimming in the sea, in the Mediterranean and so on. And he was sort of talking about anything other than playing rugby league. And it's tempting when you go down there. I think France is the most beautiful country in the world. So, you know, to live there, and particularly to live in the south near the Mediterranean, you know, it's a nice lifestyle choice.
I think the Pennines can be quite nice on the day. Anyway, Castleford against Wigan, the Friday night TV game. Catalans hosting St Helens. That's the TV game.
Not in Catalans.
You wouldn't be surprised, would you? Would you be surprised if Catalans beat St Helens?
Yes.
Think we would. Okay, we're all clear on that. Yeah. Right, excellent news. Right, well, that's our look at the Men's Super League, but what about the Women's version? Well, representatives from the Women's Super League, Championship and League One attended the season launch in Manchester on Saturday. Here is the RFL's Karen Morehouse with more.
It was fantastic. It's the first time we've done a standalone launch for the Super League competition, and I think it's certainly built up the excitement even more ahead of the Women's Super League starting this weekend. I think there's so much interest in women's and girls rugby league now, which in itself is inspiring more women and girls to start playing the sport. So lots and lots of positives coming out of that.
I mean, I interviewed a couple of clubs last season for the launch of the expanded Super League, and all the head coaches were saying at that point that, you know, the game's really been taken up a notch or two. But the launch and the PR heading into this season, it really has been kicked along a lot, hasn't it? This has been great stuff so far.
Absolutely. I think and that's testament to the players, really. What I repeatedly hear is from people within the sport and outside the sport is that, you know, when they do get the opportunity to watch women's rugby league, they're really blown away by the quality of what's on offer, the enjoyment of the games. It is different to men's rugby league. You know, there's less strength, and therefore actually there's more of an opportunity then for players to demonstrate their skills and to throw the ball around, and you get to see some great running rugby league.
You were talking there about participation and playing numbers and that kind of thing. The RFL has released figures, and it is showing a brilliant upward trajectory.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, the Super League is our kind of marquee product in a way, and I think it's people on the ground seeing players playing for brands, for teams that they know, playing at venues that they would like to play at. There's a number of the Women's Super League teams who are playing games at the main home ground of their club. You know, all the announcements around the World Cup and the fact that the women's, the men's and the wheelchair games are going to be kind of treated on an equal footing. And that's borne out by the recent venue announcements, the fact that the women's opening ceremony will be played at Anfield, and the women's World Cup final will be played at Old Trafford as a double header with the men's final. It's just sending out such strong messages about the importance and equality in which, you know, we see the women's game.
Absolutely. I mean, last season, I think Bradford Bulls, didn't they? They played Leeds at Oddsall, and as part of a curtain raiser. And it's not just at Super League level, is it? It's the community clubs who've also bought into it.
Absolutely. And I believe that Bradford are doing that again. I think they're playing Featherstone this weekend, and that's a warm-up to their match against the men's match against Dewsbury. Equally, kind of centrally, the Wigan Saints match, that's going to be broadcast this weekend via the Hour League app. So again, giving more people access to watch the women's game. And as you say, you know, this is being felt right throughout the game. So, you know, Women's Super League inspires people to play at community game level. And as you say, we've seen some really impressive increases, you know, double figure increases in terms of number of registered girls and women's players, fixtures being played, number of teams. Everything's heading in the right direction.
And obviously the target is, you mentioned the World Cup earlier, and the target is to get 21,000 women and girls playing rugby league ahead of that cup competition. It feels like we're definitely on target for that.
Absolutely. It's a great campaign. Lots of people getting behind that campaign very much at the launch. You know, certainly the little Lil and the campaign that she's doing, which, you know, I think anyone who doesn't watch that advert smile, you know, there's something you have to smile, don't you? And certainly I showed that clip to my children because, you know, I want to inspire them to play the game. And I'm sure there's lots of other children who'll watch that clip and think that they want to get a rugby league ball in their hands.
And looking forward to the season to come.
Definitely. I'll certainly be getting down to a few games, build up to the Women's Challenge Cup final, which is being played on the same day as the Men's Challenge Cup semi-finals at Bolton. So another opportunity for more people to see the sport. And from the Women's Super League perspective, building up to the final being played at Headingley, which again, another absolutely iconic venue where the women's game is going to be taken to this season.
Karen Morehouse there from the RFL. And last year, Lorraine, I'll come to you for this, but girls' teams increased by 35%, women's teams increased by 38%.
Yeah.
It's, like we said there in the interview, it's certainly heading in the right direction, isn't it?
It is. It's really a growing area of the game, and the fact that there's quite a lot of personalities in the game getting the publicity and sort of appearing on Sky and various different
back chat
and various different shows. It's showing that girls can have something to aspire to, and there is a pathway for them to get involved in the game.
And not just that as well, the clubs themselves. I mean, Bradford are playing Featherstone this weekend. That's going to be a curtain raiser to the men's game. They did that successfully last season as well, didn't they, against Leeds. Wigan against St Helens this weekend. That's going to be on our league. So the clubs and the RFL are all working together here to get to that, as we discussed earlier, that 2021 vision for the women's game.
Yeah, and I think that's an achievable aim that they've set themselves there. And as you say, you know, clubs are really getting on board now and really sort of supporting the players. And the Women's Super League teams, since last season, since it launched majorly, they've got to have strength and conditioning people on the coaching staff. So they're getting, these players are now in a really, really professional setup, even though they're not professionals themselves, and they're getting all the help they need to get the fitness up. And that's really helping get a competitive.
And I think I'm right in saying this. I read this somewhere. I've not had a chance to double check this, but the Australian game have started to do central contracting for players, and that's probably where we're going to be heading.
That's where we need to be heading. Yeah, it should hopefully be in the next few years, I'd like to think, especially with the 2021 World Cup coming up as well.
And it's not just Super League, obviously there's a Championship and League One. Last week I interviewed Whitley Bay Barbarians, and that was talking about the growth of the women's game in the North East. So it's across the piece, really, and it's great to see. Should give you a plug as well, in Rugby League World, you've done a very good and extensive preview for the Super League season. Who should we be looking out for?
When I was doing the predictions for that, it was a lot easier to pick the top four and the bottom four, but then positions in amongst them is a lot more difficult to pick. Obviously, St Helens will be up there, and having the experience of Jodie Cunningham back in the squad for the full season, because she only got back for the last two games last year, so she'll make a big difference to St Helens. Wigan will be going all out to defend their title. Leeds will be up there again. Castleford have done some really smart recruiting this season as well, bringing in Rhiannon Marshall from Leeds and Claire Garner from Bradford, who are both vastly experienced. So they're again the four main ones to look out for. And similar to how Super League's going at the minute, anyone will be able to beat anyone on the day.
Just before we move on to the Challenge Cup, you mentioned back chat there. I'm assuming this week you've gone to town, isn't it?
We've got Jodie Cunningham on the show. It was fantastically insightful on the women's game and rugby league in general. To be fair, I think
she was a great guest. Wasn't
she was. I think
well worth watching on Thursday at 5 o'clock.
I've got to say, I think we've got to find a way within all facets of the media, and when I say that, I mean magazine publications, trade newspapers, national newspapers, to give these girls in the competition more exposure, because I think we're onto something quite special here. We were having this conversation yesterday, weren't we, Martin, about how we do it, because obviously there's logistical issues and so on and so forth. I'm a massive fan of the double headers. I think that's a really good way for us to help build the profile of the game for now, and the end goal should obviously be the standalone fixtures that can generate.
I think women's sport generally is really growing in profile, isn't it? You know, and it's very important that rugby league isn't left behind in that sense.
So
I don't think it is being either.
Oh no, no. Yeah. I think that, you know, we often criticise the RFL, but they've done a great job. I think. You know this more than I do, Lorraine. But you know, from where I sit, I think the RFL has done a really good job on this.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're moving the Challenge Cup final to be played at Bolton with the men's semi-finals is just going to give the game so much exposure. The grand finals at Headingley this year, mm-hmm. as well, in a much bigger stadium. So they are getting the exposure, and TV appearances and media coverage can only help that.
I think it's worth noting, it's not just a women's game. You know, Learning Disability Super League that's just been launched. We've already got PDRL, we've got Wheelchair Rugby League. I think
it's almost a bewildering variety of
rugby league competitions,
isn't it now?
It has been the big development within rugby league over the last 3 or 4 years for me, and it's fantastic to see. And the more that we are a sport that prides itself on being inclusive, and I think this has gone above the call of duty to make sure we do that. And look, you can't doubt what it does for the clubs. Michael Carter, the Wakefield chief executive, spoke so passionately about this when I spoke to him about their learning disability side and how it was so pivotal for their community that they did that. And I think that clubs can benefit from it as well in so many ways. And I do think it's tremendous. I think some people can see it as a bit of a token gesture, and I absolutely do not agree with that sentiment. I think it really is important that we do it.
Well, as we head towards Magic Weekend, we'll hear. I mean, we did hear from the Learning Disability Super League a few weeks ago, didn't we? But sure. we're going to be previewing a bit more about the Learning Disability Super League as we head towards Magic Weekend. But let's talk about the Challenge Cup and some of the results which took place this past weekend in the fourth round of the Challenge Cup. Unlucky Keighley at home to Bradford.
Yeah.
Very, very unlucky. Hunslet was 16-6 up against crisis-ridden Halifax at half-time.
Crisis-ridden? Come on.
You bit that, didn't you? But Halifax come out on top in the end. And Wyatt Avon pipped right at the death by Rochdale. Dan Abraham scoring a 79th-minute try right underneath the sticks. The gap between League One and Championship seems to be closing, would you say?
The top and the... I'm going to say the top and the bottom, but, I mean, you don't class Halifax as a bottom half side, do you? So,
They're in the mid-table pack, aren't
they? There wasn't a single League One club beating a Championship club,
was
there? No. As it turned out. Although there was, of course, Thatoe Heath Conference Club beating a League One club in North Wales Crusaders. So, you know, which was great for that, or rather sad for North Wales, I think.
I was a little bit disappointed for Fato that they didn't get a plumper tie. No disrespect to Dewsbury, I think they'll have been looking at Leeds, won't they?
Maybe they think they can win again. Who knows?
Well, who knows?
I'll tell you who does know. Mike Denning, chairman at Fato Heath Crusaders. Yeah. I caught up with him on Monday. Let's have his reaction now to that giant killing against the North Wales Crusaders.
It was a great game, close game. Thought it went the way that I thought it would go. I wasn't being overconfident, but did think our lads would give them a really good game, and we got off to a great start. A bit nervy towards the end, but I think we just wanted it more. Defensively, we were spot on.
You went off to a bit of a flyer, really, but then North Wales started to claw their way back into the game. I mean, what were your fingernails like towards the end of the match?
Well, obviously, I didn't have any by the end of the game, Now that they ground us down towards the end, and that's what you'd expect from a semi-pro side against a community team. But I think we'd done enough early doors to justify the position we were in. You know, it was unfortunate for them that they missed a kick towards the end. But I just think tactically we got it right, and they were thoroughly deserved.
And obviously, in the next round, you've got Dewsbury back at Crusaders Park. So the hits just keep on coming.
Nothing's no foregone conclusion that. We can get them back at Crusader Park at the moment. I'll go through some kind of due diligence with the RFL in relation to that for round 5. But we showed, I think, enough about hosting the game, and North Wales are very complimentary about everything we did. You know, we had a good crowd on there. Over 730 people turned up to watch the game, which was great considering there was other things on. I'm sure we can do it again, but we're in the hands of the Rugby League gods and the management board. But, you know, we'll speak to Dewsbury. We'll show them all the respect that they deserve in their position in the Championship. We've got some top players, coaches who we know in Lee and Gareth, you know, ex-Siddle lads, and listen, we'll look forward to it.
A lot of things are said about the Challenge Cup, but this is the romance of the Cup in many ways. I mean, like you said, a crowd there of over 730. The Our League cameras were there as well. What's this past round and past weekend meant for the club?
Well, it's two things for me. One, it highlights where we are as a community club and the ability as a community club to be able to put on, you know, a tie in the Challenge Cup against a professional side. I think we come out of that very, very well, and everybody was complimentary of it. Also, it highlights the playing standards in the NCL and the upper end of the community game. It's, you know, it's solid. There's some fantastic players in that game. So that was good for us. Obviously, financially, we had a good day at the club, and also, don't forget, our North West Men's League side were away in the Barla National Cup semi-final, and they won over at Walney Central, so all those guys came back afterwards, so double celebration in the club. And it was, so financially, massive success. What that allows us to do is to build on what we have and build on the premises that we have and better facilities, better stuff for juniors and stuff coming forward. It just gives a massive boost to the club.
We spoke last week in the lead-up to this game against North Wales on the League One show, and we were talking about just the number of players both genders accounted for and great facilities as well. So, Fat O'Heath, just give us a sense of the scale of the club and what's going on at the moment at the club.
Well, you know, we are kind of a victim of our own success in that, I said it before, we came back to Tatooine, the area, and built the club there 10 years ago, and, you know, people have kind of come to us now because they know where we are. But the main thing we have to do is concentrate on the quality of what we're doing, the quality of our coaching, which we want to be the best. We want them to be the best that they can be. You know the situation. You've got dads of lads and girls at seven, under sevens coming in, or even younger, coming into the game. But we need to continue to develop, because our game has, across the board, those same coaches who are coaching at seven are still then coaching at 16s and then 18s, because it's their life. But we need to make sure that they're as best as they can be. So that's our job as a community club. And if we make them better, we make the players better, then you hope the whole game will be better for it. So, you know, that's our plan. We've got the facilities in place. We've got the personnel in place. We just need to, you know, make sure everything else is sharper.
Absolutely. And we were also speaking last week because you've got a bike ride coming up for the Steve Prescott Foundation. And, I mean, just to let everyone know, I mean, it was quite a traumatic day for yourself, really, because there was all that tension with the Challenge Cup itself. But you did a bike ride before that, all the way from Wrexham back to St Helens. I mean, how was that preparation?
Well, as I said previously, I'm not as fit as I was 10 years ago. And a lot will tell you 10 years ago, I wasn't that fit either. But the guys who came with us, obviously we had Mark Jones, a prolific cyclist from North Wales. I think he's going to join us on some of the other practice rides, if you like. I'm just thinking, drawing Dewsbury didn't do us any favours, because I'm sure our general manager, Martin Blondell, will want us to cycle from Dewsbury to wherever the game will be. And like, if that's close street and Crusader Park, that's 65 miles before the next game. But it's all getting miles in the legs. We've got a massive job to do in France, as we did 10 years ago. You're averaging almost 100 miles a day, continuously for 9 days. So these short trips, if you like, are just getting some miles in the legs and preparing us for what we've got in France. Plus, it's great to get out with the lads. I mean, Chris Joint was with us, as well as some other participants, Baz Ford, Paul Pugh, all lads who are doing this ride with us, and Dave Howarth. Some good, really good lads on that trip, and we've just got to, you know, bind together. And, you know, it was a bit of a distraction, to be fair. All the volunteers with the club doing all the hard graft. I'm just on a bike cycling 45 miles back to St Helens.
Did you make kickoff in time, by the way? That was one of my worries for yourself. Did you make it in the end?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good.
To be fair, with the lads we had, we absolutely smashed it. I think it only took us about 3 hours cycling time. So yeah, it was really good. We were back at the club before 12 o'clock.
Brilliant, that's good. Good motoring. Steve Prescott Foundation.co.uk for how to donate and support the bike ride. But Mike, just before you go, just a big congratulations. And is everyone looking forward to this weekend's big match against West Hull?
Yeah, listen, this is back the only sidetrack from the Challenge Cup. Challenge Cup is fantastic, but we're in the Premier League or the National Conference League. We've won it twice. That's where we want to be. That's the goal. So we're back on, as you say, to the hard graft this week. West Hull have a hard game against Dewsbury, ironically, last weekend. So we'll pick up a few tips from Mark Hewitt and his coaching staff as to how to approach Dewsbury. But on the pitch, off the pitch, we're great friends. On the pitch, well, that's a different story. So we'll raise ourselves again this week to play against West Hull and try and get back on track in the league.
Mike Denning there, chairman of Fatal Heath Crusaders. Interesting what you said there about Dewsbury. That match might not be played at Crusaders Park.
No.
Which seems a bit odd, because they're not going to bring more than the 700 that were there for the North Wales match.
It has happened before, though. I can't remember if it was Fatal or another team in the area that played Halifax in the Challenge Cup, and they played it at Langtree Park. Or the Totally Wicked Stadium, as we call it now. And another amateur teams have done it. Again, I remember Halifax playing Ovenden and Siddle away, but they were both played at the Shea. So,
Fryston, didn't they? They played at Featherston, didn't they?
I seem to recall. Yeah. So it's not unusual. That said, given it's Dewsbury, who aren't... I mean, we'll take some people, no doubt. I thought they would have played it at the home ground, but so be it. I guess it's irrelevant that they'll have made a lot of money from their cup draws and their success, and good on them. I think it's great that the amateur game is still represented at this stage of the competition.
If I'm really honest about it, I'm really quite glad that Thatto didn't draw one of the Super League clubs that are coming in at this stage. To put amateur players against highly tuned Super League full-time players, I think that would be a bit dangerous, if I'm really honest. I'm sure the Thatto guys are really strong in so on and so forth, but they are only amateurs. Mm-hmm. They're not conditioned in the same way that the full-time professionals are. And if there was a serious injury in a game like that, it could be... I'd be really quite worried about it. So I'm really quite pleased they're playing Dewsbury, who are, with no disrespect to them, obviously not a full-time club, and therefore the difference won't be as marked, will it?
And a big good luck to Mike Denning and the rest of the team there for that bike ride for the Steve Prescott Foundation.
Yes,
link can be found below, steveprescottfoundation.co.uk. Just look in the description to this podcast. That's nearly it for this week's show, but just a couple of matters arising before we go. The big Summer Bash TV announcement this week.
Good news.
Very good news.
Good news. The championship deserves all the exposure it can get. So I'm very pleased to see
that. I absolutely love watching the Summer Bash on television, because we...
It's good to go, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, sadly, unfortunately, I'm in the office.
Of course.
But
it's my favourite week. Martin lets me, unleashes me every year. It's fantastic.
As long as you're a good boy, Matthew, that's fine. But, the thing is that you don't often get the chance to see those games, do you? And it's amazing how good those games, even by the between the weaker sides, they're often great games at the Summer Bash. I just wish we could promote it a bit more to get more people.
I was speaking to Andy Wilson at the RFL this week, because they've obviously they're pushing it a bit more. And one thing that we've never considered about the Summer Bash is just what's been going on at Blackpool Football Club in recent years. Mm. They're now getting five-figure crowds back at Blackpool for their football matches. And the RFL,
is that because there's been a change in ownership?
A change in ownership. And the RFL were there last weekend promoting the Summer Bash to those five-figure crowds.
Brilliant.
So
it'd be great to get more locals in, because they are trying to re-establish and relaunch a club in Blackpool Rugby League.
Well, I think Blackpool is historically a great rugby league town, actually. Mm-hmm. And, Blackpool Borough, I remember going to games there in the old days, and even going to Barlow National Cup finals that were held at Borough Park. And it was always a great event, really great fun, and it would be great to see it coming back again there.
My only criticism of the Summer Bash is the fact that it's so close to Magic Weekend, because you've got to think that you are losing people off the Summer Bash gate, because it's so close to Magic Weekend. People have paid to stay over, paid for the match tickets, and can't afford to have another weekend away the week after.
And it's the same weekend as the New Camp game.
I just wish.
Have you ever been to Blackpool in July? It's quite an interesting place. It's too hot.
I just wish they could find a way to spread it out a little bit more, to give people a chance to save up. I really do. But for me, I mean, the most enjoyable game I watched last year was at Summer Bash. It was Toulouse against London.
Mm.
And it was just fantastic. Mm. It was absolutely fantastic. Matt Corralla was stunning. Mm. The Halifax-Featherstone game was great. The Toronto Lee game was fantastic when Toronto just weren't in the game and snatched it at the death.
Yeah, yeah.
And
killed off Lee's chances, didn't they?
Yeah, effectively. Mm. It's a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And you look at some of the fixtures. I mean, to lose Toronto, that's opening the weekend, yeah, which is brilliant. You've got Bradford Halifax as the main event on the Saturday, which will be fantastic. I would really recommend to everyone that they attended, because it is a fantastic event,
no doubt.
I've decided while we're talking there, because you were talking about Blackpool Borough, that we can go off air with this show when Birkenhead Wanderers, Liverpool Stanley, and Blackpool Borough all reform. I think that's fair.
It would be nice,
yeah, because those are the three clubs we keep mentioning now, every week. Anyway, right, nearly it, but the England Knights internationals coming up later in the year. Yeah. That's welcome news too.
Good news.
We don't yet know who they're going to be playing. It'd be nice to see them play in Jamaica, wouldn't it?
That's the talk, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And, Jamaica are playing the USA in a home game, which is going to be fantastic, presumably in Kingston. And a lot of players who play in our competition, are going to be part of that for Jamaica.
Yeah.
And it would be really nice if rugby league could take off in the Caribbean in that way, wouldn't it? Because I think they're in the World Cup already, Jamaica, they've qualified. But I think them being involved just adds a great deal of sort of vibrancy to the tournament, or will do. And, it's going to be fascinating to see them play.
There'd be nothing greater than seeing Jamaica v Tonga, would there? Maybe not on the field, but in terms of spectacle and the colour that they bring.
Absolutely.
Or PNG. I think we've really got to... We were speaking about it again this yesterday. There is a big Caribbean community, certainly in the Leeds area. I think we really got to tap into that. Because there will be some... I mean, Ashton Golden's likely to play as an example. He's a Leeds boy. I think it would be fantastic. And if they don't coin the phrase cool scrummings, then they've missed the
track. Just imagine if we had Nigeria on a few weeks ago. Just imagine Nigeria against Jamaica in London. Mm. Imagine that, what the crowd would be like.
It'd be
immense, wouldn't it?
There's so much potential.
Right, housekeeping, parish notices. What's coming up? We've got Backchat. What's on Backchat on Thursday on Facebook?
On Backchat is me, Martin Sadler, Jodie Cunningham, and Gary Heverington, Leeds CEO, who was good.
Really good. Really, yeah.
It was a good show, actually. Yeah. It was a good show.
Asking about reserves.
Yes.
Good.
He started chuckling in his seat. I could see.
Yeah. It's not like he didn't know the question was coming.
It was like, when do I move this topic on? And I just saw him moving his seat and turn his shoulders towards Martin, getting ready. And I thought, right, I'm just going to leave these two to go at it for a couple of minutes. Yeah.
And Lorraine, Rugby League World's out.
Yeah, it's another great issue previewing, as we've touched on, the women's season, but full of all sorts. Matt's probably the best one to talk you through that as the story.
Injuries in the office, workplace.
Well, we go from rugby league in Lithuania to a really extensive account of what happened at Widnes and where they're going. We go from really serious issues like the North American takeover to the story about how Lorraine was hospitalised by a pigeon.
Not hospitalised, just bruised.
We've got one of my favourite pieces, and I'll open it up, and I won't read any of it because you should buy it to read it, but it was with the West Wales Raiders player Ryan Shalish.
Oh yes.
Who is deaf, and his story is just inspiring and tremendous. It prides me that we have this opportunity to promote these stories that I don't think get the coverage they're deserving.
No.
And I think that's what Rugby League World's all about, really.
It is.
And it's available in all good news agents and all bad ones too. And you can buy it online on totalrl.com.
And a great front cover with Witness there.
It's very Games of Thrones, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that was the idea. Mm. That was the idea. And obviously, as is Rugby League, some people hated it.
But at least they noticed it. That's the point. If you notice it.
Matt mentioned cake right at the start of this podcast, and we've got cake in the magazine as well.
Dan Fleming
from Halifax. He sent some very nice cakes back to the office as well after that interview.
Yeah, they all went pretty quickly.
So we all enjoyed them.
Luke Gale's column as well, I think it's interesting, him talking about his rehab.
And Hemel Staggs as well is in there too. about where they go to next. And that.
I mean, we've practically gone through all 80 odd pages.
Yeah, it's good that you don't need to buy anymore. Right, anyway, totalrl.com, the place to go to buy that publication, as well as your subscriptions for League Express. What have we got coming up on Monday? Any tidbits?
Well, it's already been a busy week.
It's been a bit busy week. I think we're going to have an interview with Brian Barwick in League Express on Monday, just talking about his time, hopefully, at the RFL over the last 6 years, and he'll tell us what he has achieved, hopefully. Which,
what if he doesn't like this podcast?
Who knows? Who knows whether he'll hear it or not? But there's an awful lot of stuff in League Express every week. Everything's topical, of course, so we can't necessarily predict what everything will be at this stage. But it'll certainly be great fun to put it together and to read, I'm sure.
Well, that's it for this week's Total Rugby League show. A big thank you to Lorraine Marsden for joining us. Matthew Shaw.
Welcome,
Martin Sadler.
Thank you.
And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure that you have fun. Bye-bye.